Channel 2 Right and beginning a visit with Debbie. This Tuesday noon, the 15th of August, 72, the first time in the 7 months that she was in Europe. Channel 2 Right and beginning a visit with Debbie this Tuesday noon, the 15th of August, 72. Channel 2 Right and beginning a visit with Debbie this Tuesday noon, the 15th of August, 72. Channel 2 Right and the beginning of the visit with Debbie this Tuesday noon, the 15th of August, 72. Channel 2 Right and beginning of the visit with Debbie this Tuesday noon, the 15th of August, 72.
We've just waited such a long time.
I didn't know. A long time.
Gosh.
Well,
you see
somebody from France.
How are
you?
See how
they
look.
Good idea. Let me see. I'm not any different, am I?
I don't know.
Everybody says I am, but I'm
crazy. You sort of streamlined, didn't you?
I believe she is. Everybody thinks I've gotten taller, but maybe I just stand up straighter.
Or have your boots. That's what I'm looking at. Those hiking shoes.
Yeah, they're really hiking shoes. That's what you wear when you...
Now, you didn't hike in those.
No, I didn't.
No.
No, I hiked in... Well, I hiked in some other kinds of shoes till my feet hurt too much, and then I gave them up and hiked in sandals for a while.
Just plain old sandals. And you not a...
I was ruining my feet in walking shoes. I got a pair of English walking shoes. I thought, I'm really going to do this right, you know.
Then you get in front of this
walk
sand,
a lot.
Or you'll burn out.
Yeah.
So I had some English walking shoes, and they were too small, and it started ruining my feet. So.
You know, I don't know a thing about walking shoes.
I don't either. That's why I got them too small. I don't know a thing about them. That's one thing you're supposed to know when you go hiking and all that all over Europe. You're supposed to know about walking shoes. It's how you tell who's the best tourist by the biggest soles on their shoes. So I got a pair, but they certainly were too narrow, and it was so cold in February that I was wearing two pairs of socks with them. There wasn't enough room for my foot and all the socks. We chose February. We went to Chartres for 4 days in February, and it was about 10 degrees colder inside the church than it was outside, which meant there was ice on the wall, practically. We'd make a tour of the church, and they had one place where they had a heater, mm-hmm. sort of a floor vent.
Oh, in the corner or somewhere?
Yes. You could see, you'd watch the groups go around, and they'd all end up in one corner, you know, and you knew everybody was sort of warming up for a while, and then they'd go around again, and then they'd come back and stand. Oh, it was so really funny. In the summertime, it's fine because it's like an air conditioning. But this wintertime,
the only thing I ever could remember about walking shoes was those old German shoes. They were low quartered, and I don't know how they were made, but they always had this tongue that lapped back
out.
Over and made them. That was just for the appearance, you see.
Well, now they lay the tongue comes up, and you lace them up. They're supposed to come up over your ankle to give your ankle support. If they're real hiking shoes.
Oh.
Mine weren't real hiking shoes. They were just called walking shoes.
Yeah.
I should have gotten real hiking shoes.
I gotta tell you, I have problems. Even, you know these boots I wear, four-buckle boots?
Mm-hmm.
I can't get them. You see, I wear two pairs. I have to get a pair every 6 months. They disintegrate in this climate, I judge. And Sears is the only place I can get them, and Sears has quit handling them in the summer.
Oh, no.
So I'm barefoot. All this tall grass around here, you see, I can't get out. till the dew gets off. Debbie, did you walk all the time?
No, not all the time. I rode some buses, too. I used to ride a bus into Nice because I lived about 30 minutes outside of Nice.
Was that far?
It took about 30 minutes on the bus. You could drive it faster. And the Vincent, who was the son of the family that I lived with, had a little mobilette. That's what all the students have over there. Those little, they're bikes, but they have motors on them.
Yeah.
And he used to make it in 15 minutes.
But
he flew low. I would never ride one.
No.
I thought they were very dangerous, and I never wanted to get on one.
You can crack your cranium with that just as easy as you can in 5 miles an hour. Oh, yeah.
Well, they were always having accidents with them. See, over there, they have no laws about wearing helmets, so, which is really insane. You shouldn't ride something like a motorbike or a motorcycle or anything without a helmet. And none of the kids over there do. So.
Well, Faye, Debbie didn't come out here to sit down here.
Well, she sure did. And
look at you and me. She came
out
ride her horse.
It's a little hot right now, and you know, I came out here to rest. My mother said to me as I walked out the door, well, go take a nap. I have two little kids at home, and I'm just glad to sit down quietly and talk to adults and not say to some child, you know, go pick that up.
Yeah.
Seems like every time I come home, I have grandchildren here, too, so I think they were here at Christmas, too. So it's,
oh, were they?
Mm-hmm. They're a lot more fun to be with now than they were at Christmas time.
Yeah.
They're little people now. I was saying that Harris wants to see the horses. He likes horses, so we might ride out one day and look at the horses with him.
Yeah.
He likes.
But you
them.
Say you found yourself looking at the clock?
Oh yes, I look at the clock every 15 minutes. I admire my sister very much. She lives with them.
Susie.
Yeah.
And
they run my mother and me ragged, and Susan lives with them all the time.
Just one.
She said, well, that's really something. They're not so bad. I think the problem is that Mother and I follow them around all the time, and Susan doesn't.
Yeah.
She's smarter than we are. That's why we admire her. She's so much smarter.
Maybe she doesn't have as many plate glass windows as you do.
Well, she also has an air-conditioned house. I guess they sleep a lot on the vents or something. Well, like us in the cathedrals over the heating vents.
You look at the clock and it's a quarter after. It's just 15 minutes after 3, and you look at it again.
Yes. You wake up in the morning at 7:05, and by 7:45 you think it's about noon, and by 9:15 you're sure it must be time for them to go to bed.
Yeah. You know, we grew up with one generation of children, and since then I've been a little bit skittish.
Of children? Well, I'll tell you, I'm getting skittish.
Great pleasure for one generation, especially when they weren't Faye's, they were her sisters, you know. Oh, we did have them, but you see, their mama took off she took the brunt off all the shocks. You see, she took the shock off all the things, and we got to it. Maybe I'll tell you what. You were lucky in a way in not being around here the last 2 months.
What's been happening?
We haven't had a summer like this in a long time.
It's been hot.
Oh, it has. And I've been in awful shape. I've been doing bibliographies. And just about to kill me. I can't even go out and sit in the shade. You see, I've got those bibliographies on my mind all the time.
Well, I'm...
And most of them, you see, most of the things I read, I don't want to know them. I'm perfectly satisfied in my ignorance.
I am too. Oh. I am too.
I think that's one of the awful things about the the graduate world. You see, you can't read everything, but you got to read some of the key things. Every time you read something new, you got to shift your whole attitude all down the line. You see, I changed my attitude towards Ahab, and that means I've got to go back and look at Emerson different.
No rest.
and I was very comfortable in my own readings. You see, all of them are wrong. But they were fruitful.
Mm-hmm.
They enabled me to do a great many things. My misreadings of Emerson. So, you know, it wouldn't be right for me to just go ahead and write a book or write an article about Emerson as I see him in the light of his bibliography. I have to write it the way I saw him while I was doing these things. Mm-hmm. But wouldn't I get it? Yes, sir.
This is somewhere.
Wouldn't I get it?
Like my mispronunciation of French, but I finally did learn to speak it. Sure did take a long time. It was the hardest thing I ever did.
You mean it's hard?
Oh, it's really hard. I thought it was. It's not hard to read it. That's the easiest thing in the world, reading it and writing it, or writing down what somebody says. That's easy, but speaking it. I had a mental block or something. It was so hard. And a lot of it was that every time I'd say something, people would answer me in English. Because I still have a very strong English accent when I speak French. People know that I speak English. They don't know that I'm American, but they know that I speak English. It's my first language. And in Paris, especially, people would answer in English sometimes. And in Nice, because there were so many English-speaking people there. And I'd go into stores and I'd start speaking French, and they just sort of look at me and answer me in English, and I'd get so frustrated. It's like, no, speak French to me. I want to speak French. The bus drivers did it to me all the time. I memorized the name of the stop where I'd get off, and I'd get on every time and tell them in French, and they'd answer me in English.
I didn't know that.
I guess, well, around Nice, there's so many tourists that people speak English and Italian and French, too. They speak as much Italian in Nice as they speak French.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And there's a language, Niçoise, is a mixture of Italian and French. And it's an official dialect.
Oh, is it?
Mm-hmm. And they speak in a sing-song, so if you go into the old city of Nice, it's like speaking French with an Italian accent. They parla come sa, goes up and down like that, which is the Italian inflection in French, and you can really tell it.
Yeah, but you didn't fool with the dialect?
I just tried the language, just the French. That was hard enough. Speaking French.
Well, you were trying to do it right, correctly. Mm.
Well, huh? Supposedly. No, I had no trouble at all. I still have very little trouble reading or writing French. That there are vocabulary words sometimes that I don't know. But now I can speak it too, which is really exciting. I didn't realize quite how exciting it was until after I was out of school and I was traveling this summer.
Yeah.
And I could understand everything anybody ever said to me. and I went to see some people in Normandy, and when I left, well, after my friend left, I didn't speak any more English until I went to Germany, and then I tried to speak French, and they didn't understand. I had cultural shock when I went to Germany because no one understood me when I spoke French.
Yeah.
And on the train going in, I found I was sitting next to a woman who spoke both, she was German but had been living in France, so she spoke French and German, and I just sort of latched onto her like this because I knew she spoke German, and I wanted someone to tell me how to, I didn't even know what Ausgang meant,
yeah.
Meaning exit. It took me two train stations to figure out what was exit and what was enter. Really. And of course, coming back to the States was cultural shock all over again, too.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
Seeing all the signs in English and hearing the accents so are so strident, American accents, after hearing people speak, they think English and American are two different languages.
Oh, yeah.
And they teach them as two different languages, too.
Yeah.
So.
But mostly they teach English.
Mostly they teach English. And Europeans have a lot of trouble understanding Americans. They don't understand the accents. Can't understand a Southern accent or a Brooklyn accent or something like that.
You see, I run into these people who travel all the time. They never mention these things. But in England, I went to Faye, and first time I'd ever been there any time, and I couldn't understand what they said. I couldn't talk to the English. Everybody else could talk to them, except I don't think they could. I had a great trouble, and
mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't try it anymore. I just consider English as sort of foreign language for me.
Yes, it is. One of the expressions that I liked so much was, well, Mrs. Rice lived with us for a while. She was Madame Unal was English, and her mother was with us for about a month.
Was that Mrs. Rice?
That's Mrs. Rice. Mm-hmm. And she didn't speak French to me because she spoke very good French, as a matter of fact, but she didn't like to speak it, and so she would speak English to me, although the rest of the family spoke only French. But one day, Jean-Pierre, was the little four-year-old, was running along, and he was losing his pants. He'd forgotten to put his braces on, his suspenders, and so he was losing his pants, and she looked at him across the room, and she said, "Jean-Pierre, your trousers are descending." I just will never forget that. In England, pants don't just fall down, they descend.
In England?
In England.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really? It's not French that she was translating.
No, it was English.
Yeah.
Descending pants. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, that was Miss Rice. Was she Scotch?
No, she was.
She wasn't the one from Scotland.
No, she was. She grew up in Madeira, so she spoke Portuguese and French and German and a lot of languages,
uh-huh.
But she was just English.
You know, she's sort of gant, Faye. Look at that. Look at that. I see the bones.
You don't believe you weigh as much.
No? That's fine.
Yeah.
Well, Ms. Rice.
She's been moving around.
Yeah, I know it.
And when you walk a lot, you know,
oh, yeah.
You're walking all over Europe, that's it. Does it to you.
And they walk?
They walk a lot. Europeans walk a lot.
They hike a lot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, in Germany, especially. They Germans are the most active people. Much more so than the French, I think. French people they're not very athletic. They don't like to do anything that's too vigorous.
Oh, really?
For a long time, they've had a real problem in the schools because they don't have any program like physical education for the kids, so that children either grow up, sometimes they grow up doing sports, but usually it's completely academic and they never do anything with sports at all, and they're trying very hard to have some kind of, well, in this country we mix it up, you know, you have to take physical education and all that sort of thing, which is, I suppose sometimes you do too much of it, but they're trying over there to do a little more, have sports and things. They were also having a big debate about whether or not to, they always have Thursday off in the French schools. They go to school on Saturday and have Thursday off. And they were trying to decide whether they'd have Saturday off like the Americans. They don't like Americans very much. That was the, so they were, I think the final decision was not to change it. They work them so hard that they need a rest in the middle of the week. Jean-Pierre was 4, and he went to school from 8:30 in the morning till 11:30, and from 1:30 to 4:30. 4 years old, and this wasn't nursery school, this was school.
Oh.
I never heard of anything like this. Is that right?
That's right.
Was he exceptional?
No.
You mean he went with other fourth graders, four-year-olds?
Mm-hmm. 4 and 5. It was not quite like kindergarten, but they were starting to write. They were doing little exercises to learn how to make loops and things like that. I mean, they didn't spend all day writing and reading and things like that. They played a lot. But it was school. It was in school with the other children all day.
Gee whiz.
That's pushing it. I think. It's a long day.
You suppose that's for the children's benefit or for the parents?
I think it's probably for the parents.
You don't know.
Madam, you know, I liked it a lot.
She liked it.
She liked it. Well, he liked it, too. It was very good for him because he didn't have any little children to play with. Their other two children were quite a lot older than he was. They were 18 and 21.
Gee whiz.
And
then he was already writing?
I used to write things for him. He would ask me to write words, and I'd write the words down, and he could copy anything I wrote. But that was just copying letters. He hadn't really learned his letters yet.
Yeah. And he didn't read?
No, he didn't read. He didn't read.
So they don't push him?
No. But they do teach them how to make, you know, the first things for learning to write. Circles and crosses and loops and straight lines and whatever.
They're really, really, really school broke, aren't they?
Now, Debbie, the Younals were not friends of your family.
No, we met them. Well, when we got there in January, I registered at the university and I asked them if they had a course that started. And they said, yes, we have one starting in March. And I said, is there anything before that? And they said no. So we had some friends in Nice, and they said, we asked them what I should do about finding a place to live in March. And they said, well, why don't you go to a church? Because you can just ask the minister or the priest if there is a family who could rent you a room, because I wanted to be somewhere where I'd have to speak French rather than, through the school you can rent rooms with families, but it's usually they just rent you a room and you just have no contact with the family at all. So we thought if we tried going through the church that perhaps I could really live in the family. So first Sunday we were in Nice, we went to church, and there's only one Protestant church in Nice, and we decided to go there since we weren't Catholic, and I decided that it might be a little easier, you know, not to have to go to Mass every Sunday or something. So after church, went up to the minister and said, tried to explain to him what I wanted. Well, my French was so bad, just awful. And he didn't understand anything except that I spoke English, because I kept speaking English along with the French. And so he took my name and address, and he said he didn't understand a thing, as we later found out. I thought he'd understood what I was looking for, but he hadn't. So he called Madame Younal, because she is English and speaks English. And he said to her, as she later told me, there is this poor English girl. There is something terribly wrong with her. I don't know what it is. I think she's an au pair girl at this hotel. And you must go over and find out what's wrong with her, because something is bothering her a great deal. I don't know what he thought was wrong with me. You know? So she appeared the next day saying, "Poor dear, you know, what's wrong? Can I help you? You know, I speak English. Tell me what your trouble is." And I said, "Well, I have no trouble at all. I just need some place to live." In March. And so she just said, very impulsively, she just said, "Come and live with us, because we have an extra room." Their daughter was gone. Their daughter was getting married in April to an English boy. So she was over in England. And she said, "Come stay in Tessa's room with us." And then she left. And she probably later regretted that she had asked me, because she just sort of said it, you know, very impulsively, and then went back and talked to her family, and they probably yelled at her, "You know, what are you doing renting a room to a student?" But we went over and met, I never met Monsieur Nalor or the son until I moved in. But we arranged everything, and then we were gone from Nice for February, and I just came back and started living with them in March. But it was really very unusual, because I think had she been French, she would not have done that. I think the only reason that she did was because she was English. A French family would never, a truly French family, you know, if she had been French, would not have been so spontaneous about asking a total stranger into their house.
Oh, really?
The French are very closed on their family life. They don't, I knew very few French people well in Nice. I knew the Unals, and I knew a couple of friends of theirs. But they live outside the house. They live sort of in cafes and in the street, if you will. They don't, but the family and the home are very private, and they don't ask people to come there. I knew a girl, a French girl, through the Unals, and I used to go and have lunch with her, and she worked in Nice, and I used to go and have lunch with her between my classes, and we were, you know, fairly good friends, and we saw each other every couple of weeks, and I knew her for 3.5 months, and the week before I left, she lived with her parents, and they invited me for lunch, and I was extremely flattered, because I realized that this was, for her parents, was really a sacrifice to ask this strange girl to come to their house and eat a eat a meal, which is totally the opposite concept from America, where we live completely in the house, at home. We don't have anything that compares to a French cafe or a German guest house or anything like that, where the whole community meets.
Well, it's not because they don't have room or accommodations or anything.
That's part of it. Their houses aren't as big, and it's more trouble for them to keep people. But it's also just that the family is very sacred in France, and they don't accept people who are not outside the family. Or at least that was my experience. Other than the Unals, which was just an exception, that they accepted me so completely.
Yes, I remember you said they were. Lived in the street, so to speak, and didn't invite you to their houses.
Maybe they don't.
Yeah. Well, I figured it was well, let me tell you, Debbie. I didn't even know anybody outside the family when I was over there, and when I was growing up, you see, I was ignorant and young and old, and I never used the language, not even English, as well as you do, and I paid 110 marks fully for flagrant, 3 meals a day, board and lodging, you might say. 110 marks, that was $35. But that was a lot of money at that particular time. And I was there for 3 meals a day and tea and cooking in the afternoon. Whatever it was, I was around, you see. I didn't stay in the house. I was out, in and out all the time. But I never went in anybody's house. So there were just two or three houses that I even ever looked in.
That was in Germany.
Germany. I guess they were different, but I didn't know them. So, I didn't see much of Germany, did I? I didn't get around much, you might say.
Well, you proposed to. It was lucky, wasn't it, that you...
It was extremely well, and the another thing that was so amazing was that the first night that I went to the UNALS, we were sort of making small talk sort of thing, you know, and they said, oh, well, we have one cousin who lives in America, and she lives in Florida, and I said, oh, well, isn't that interesting, you know, what, where, and oh, well, he thought that she was married to a man, an American, who taught French, and he thought it was at the University of Miami. It was the biggest university in Florida. And I said, well, perhaps it's the University of Florida in Gainesville. And they said yes. And her name was Anne Marie and George Diller. And he's here at the French in the French department. And it turns out that Anne Marie had been the person who had taped Phoebe's lecture because she spoke such nice French that we had gotten her to tape the lecture in December, so we had met her, and she said later, she said after we'd gone, she wondered why she didn't say to us, well, I have cousins and niece, go look them up when you get there, but I ended up living with her cousins, which was amazing coincidence, really was. So I think they sort of felt that made it a tie. With you now, I thought that was all right, then after that I could stay.
He
was pretty authoritarian.
Oh.
He scared me when I spoke French. He's the one that always used to look at me like this. The last day I left, he was still looking at me like that when I spoke, and I didn't speak that badly.
Well, you think it was the language?
Oh, it was the language. It was. I mean, he's a nice man. He just intimidated me when I went to speak.
Now, how was that, Brett Daly?
He was a nice man.
How do you look at you?
Like that.
All the time he was talking?
He'd squint his eyes and he'd look at me like it was really painful to understand what I was saying.
Yeah.
And I don't think he realized that he looked like that when he talked to me. And I didn't know how to tell him in French. I couldn't say it in English. I didn't know how to tell him, don't look at me like that. I'm not stupid.
Yeah. Did it really get you this French?
Well, I think the thing that I come back with most of all is that it's very, very difficult to immigrate to a country. I have a great deal of respect for immigrants because it's very difficult to always be unable to express yourself to go for several months having to express yourself in very simple sentences. And you do feel like an idiot, and people treat you like an idiot. And it really grated. You know, I wanted to say a lot of things, and I couldn't for a long time. I just couldn't say them. I had to almost speak in baby talk. And after a while, you start thinking, my God, what's wrong with my mind? You know, why can't I say something? And, you know, you just can't. You can't. I would start sentences and they would be so long and involved I'd get halfway through and I'd be completely twisted up and be unable to get out of it. And my professor used to say to me, just say simple things. You don't have to say complicated things. And I said, but I want to say this and this and this and this and this and this. And she'd say, well, you can't say it all in one sentence. You don't know enough French. Say five sentences. Oh, dear.
If you look at that, hey, she's just skinny. She knows. Look at that. She's really been on the go, hasn't she? She and Mark Twain.
She and Mark Twain.
Yeah.
He never sat still.
Well, I've seen a lot.
Well.
Do you ever see a garlic market?
No, but I like garlic, except I wouldn't want to just bite a bud.
I never knew there were so many different kinds of garlic until I went to Marseille. And we got off, we had a morning there. We came in steerage class on this boat from Corsica. We had a morning until we got the train to go to Arles. And so we just were walking around Marseille, and we found the garlic market. Now, they told me that people eat a lot of garlic in Provence, and I really believe it. This was an open-air market that was probably as big as your whole yard and house, and down to where the fence is, down to that pasture, and it was nothing but garlic. 10 different kinds of garlic, red garlic, white garlic, blue garlic.
Well, that's an acre.
And just garlic, and all braided and pretty braids. And I was going to get some to bring back, but I knew that the customs would take it when I got to this country. They wouldn't let you bring it in.
Oh, wouldn't they?
You can't bring back anything edible or anything living.
Might have germs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anything living other than yourself, I guess. I had a turtle, too, and we're talking about bringing him back, but that was too much trouble.
The tortoise?
Mm-hmm.
She gave you one?
I had two of them, finally.
Oh, I want to know that.
I have a picture of them. They're really cute. They were a year old and this big.
Oh, is that all?
That's all. Well, my friend said, you know, if you want one, we get Mrs. Squires to give you one. And I said, well, I thought they were cute, but I'd have to talk to the Younals because I didn't really think that I'd try to take it back with me. So I'd talk to them and see if they'd be willing for Jean-Pierre to have these turtles. So I talked to Madame Younal about it, and she said, actually, that would be a really wonderful thing because her husband had been telling her for about 2 years that he wanted turtles in the garden because in France a lot of people keep tortoises in their gardens. Why? I'm not really sure because it seems to me they'd probably eat the plants, but I guess they're sort of live stones moving around. And so she said, do bring the turtle because he'd love to have it. So I came with this turtle that was this big, and she just looked at it and she said, well, I was expecting a turtle like this. What are you bringing me, this little minute thing like this? And I said, well, it's a year old. And she said, it's a year old? How long before it's going to be this big? And I said, oh, about 10 years. And so we kept it in a box in the house because it was too little to put outside. We'd have lost it or stepped on it or something. It was so little.
Yeah.
So we had it in a box in the kitchen. And then my friend Tom left, and he had a turtle, and he decided not to take it back, and he decided that it would be lonesome. So it needed our turtle for a friend. So I left two turtles with them in the kitchen, and they were thinking about making a cage for them outside when I left, but I don't know whether they did or not. These 2 years then we had like that.
Debbie, I don't know how you found time to write as much as you did. Now, it's no great folder, but that's a great deal of writing that you did out here while you were there. And you had to write a lot of people. I don't see how you did it.
Oh, I like it. It was fun. I enjoyed it.
Just write the same thing?
No, I wrote different things to everybody, I guess. It was hard. I didn't have a typewriter. And I didn't have any carbon paper. So it was hard.
So you don't have any of this stuff you wrote?
No. Because I just, it was too long to try to copy it.
No Xeroxes?
Xeroxing was 20 cents a page. So.
Well, you could get 2 or 3 of those in a page.
Oh, the air letters?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now, the little ones.
Mm-hmm.
Those sheets. Still, it's mine.
I have all the letters that I wrote home. I have a stack like this.
But they kept them for your home?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they kept them there. Actually, I think I asked, my godmother has all the letters that I wrote, and I asked a couple of other people to keep them so I can sort of collect them. some people.
Yeah.
That I've written to.
And you have your journal. Did you refer to a journal?
Mm-hmm. Packed away in one of the, I kept sending boxes back from Nice, so I'll get it out.
What is, how did you...
I kept it for the first couple of months, and then after I started school, I got tied up in learning French and didn't keep it up then.
Well, journals generally don't have anything much interesting in them, just sort of day books.
I just wrote things down every couple of days that I found interesting.
But it wasn't readable in the shape you put it in.
Probably not. It's not. I don't know. I could try. What I should do is work with it now.
Yeah.
Go back to it.
Yeah. And then you can resurrect it while it's in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, Debbie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It goes really fast. Even the language goes so quickly. Because I haven't spoken French now for about a month. And I know that when I start speaking it again, it'll take a little bit of time to be speaking it again.
Yeah.
Even when I went to see my friends in Normandy, after I had been speaking French for English for 3 weeks with my friend Russell, even though I spoke French also, because any time I wasn't talking to her, I was speaking French with people around us. It still took a couple of hours that first night to start speaking French again, because I had started thinking in English again.
Yeah.
Instead of thinking in French. It language just makes all the difference. It really does, being able to speak anybody's language.
Yeah.
Because the people in Normandy that I didn't even know them in February. I spent much more time in February there than I did in when was I there? July. I only spent 4 days with them. But we just talked constantly. We'd sit up until 3 o'clock in the morning talking, and I really felt that I knew them after that. You know, we had so much to talk about and so many things that we felt the same way about. Whereas before, it was always... Mm-hmm.
We didn't get in on that.
These were some friends of Phoebe's. They were a family that her family had corresponded with, like pen pals.
But they were French.
They were French, yeah. And Phoebe's father had written to the grandfather of this girl when he was in college in 1910, and they had just continued writing to this family.
Is that right?
And we went to see them, Marie-Claude and her husband Julien, and her mother and her two grandmothers there in Avranches, which is right by Mont-Saint-Michel. And it's right on the coast. And they invited me to come back and see them after I was out of school. We stayed almost a week with them in February, and then they said, come back again before you leave, and it was only about a 4-hour train ride from Paris, so I went out after my friend Russ left and stayed with them. And they're really lovely people. She teaches school. She teaches primary school, and he's he installs heating units, I guess. And the thing that's so really amazing is that she takes care. She has two grandmothers, and she just takes care of them all the time. And that's sort of the reason that they're still in Avranches, just because of the two grandparents and the two grandmothers. And she just is always there. And Julien came to live there because he wanted her to marry him, and he was from the other side of France, and said, you know, come away. And she said, no, I'm not going to marry you. I'm going to stay here and take care of my grandmothers. And so he left his job and came and got a job installing furnaces and moved to Avranches. And now he goes to see the... He goes every day to see the grandparents, to see the grandmothers. And that's a kind... Again, it's the same devotion to family that exists more rarely, I think, in this country. I don't think that people here would do that as readily. In America, it would be much more the idea, well, we'll send our grandmother to a nursing home rather than... Although they don't actually have the grandparents in the home, the grandmothers, living with them, but it's
The grandmothers have their own homes.
The grandmothers have their own homes, and they have, each of them has someone who sort of lives with them like a housekeeper. So that.
But then she's there and can sort of.
She does all their errands and all their shopping and.
Yeah.
Yes, does everything for them. And they're very, well, her grandmother, her father's mother, who was the one that the family, that Phoebe's family corresponded with, used to talk, well, she's quite ill now, but she talked all the time about the war. She was very, and I think because I was a young American coming, they took me to see the beaches where the American forces landed on D-Day. And
oh, really?
They wanted to be sure that I saw that before I came back and saw all the war monuments. And they took me to see all the war cemeteries and everything. And the grandmother used to talk about the war all the time and how I went to see her several times and she would just talk about how indebted they were to the Americans. And I don't know whether, I never had that feeling from anyone else but this one family, that in general people, I had the feeling that people in France didn't really like Americans very much. But this family, perhaps because they had corresponded with an American family, felt, you know, they were trying to express that also, the correspondence.
Well, they ran the Americans out.
Well, they resent very much now in France the things that are the result of American free enterprise coming in, sort of, you know, they want to have material things. And you know, they're a prime example. They have so many material things, it's just incredible. I mean, you know, they have a sailboat, and they have a underground watering system for the lawn, and they have all kinds of, they belong to a tennis club, and you know, on and on and on, these things that they have and do. And but yet they're very, well, Monsieur now is anti-American. He's a Gaullist and just doesn't like Americans very much. And they liked me, I think. I know, it's sort of, you know, well, I have lots of black friends. lots of friends who are Americans, but I don't like Americans. You know, it's the same psychology. They thought I was their friend, but they don't like Americans. And that, it's sort of the across-the-board thing that anything French is good and anything American is bad, which grated after a while. I used to argue with them about that. But I think there are a lot of things in France that are very, very nice, and I wish we had in this country, but there are a lot of things in American that I like, too. And I am American. I mean, I can't be French. Even if I speak French, I can't be French. And
you know, like the converted sinners, you can be more French than French if you want to.
But that's not really being French.
But you got a good look at Michelle, you know.
Mm-hmm. There were two. There was the grandmother, Madame Unal, and then Madame Unal, the English, and then Mrs. Rice, who was the English grandmother. But Madame Unal, the English, the younger Madame Unal, was just a remarkable woman, just very open and.
Oh, was she?
She's the one that invited me to come and stay, and she was. Just would do anything for anyone, you know. She just. And very active person, just always doing things, and they were usually doing things for other people. Her husband was never there. They worked very, very long hours. He would go to work at 7:30 in the morning, and then they have 2 hours for lunch, but he'd never come home till 9 o'clock at night.
Goodness.
So I guess she channeled all her energy. Not much of a family life. And then he'd come home at 9, and we would eat dinner then at 9 for 2 hours. And then
His day was
dinner. He's a real Frenchman, yeah. Was his food. Food and wine. They used to get wine. We'd go through a case of wine a week.
Oh.
They ordered it from the wine merchant. Wine and bread we had delivered every day.
Really?
The French drink, well, they eat more bread and drink more wine than anybody in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'd go through a bottle of wine every night, just about. Of course, there were four of us drinking it.
Did it agree with you?
Mm-hmm. I liked it a lot.
I couldn't drink it. It was
no? Oh, I liked it. I like the wine in Germany too. It's different. It's the white wines in Germany are very good. And,
well, how did you have time for 2 hours at dinner?
Well, that's 9 to 11. That's not that much time, really. I mean, it was. We spent most of the time eating, getting through all 7 courses. But we talked a lot too. And that was sort of the reason that I wanted to live with a French family, so that you'd have that time, because meals are very important in France and very important to
the That's a
social occasion, and
that's
it should
when
be.
When the family gets together.
When the family gets together, and it should be, I think. I think that's a very, very positive thing about French families, that is just really important. And another thing that I think is really nice in France that I wish people did here is that they shake hands all the time. And they kiss in France too. You embrace people when you see them. In Germany they just shake hands. You know, but they shake hands all the time. They shake hands when they go to bed at night, you know, say goodnight and shake hands. In France they kiss too. But it's just so nice to do. In this country it's so formal to shake hands with someone.
Yeah.
The first week that I was back, I was sort of walking around sticking my hand out at everybody because I was so used to doing it. And people here look at you as though you're crazy when you go to, you touch somebody, and it's just a sin in this country.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It is. People think, either they think you're being too formal. I was at a wedding this weekend. A boy that I went to high school with got married, and a lot of people that I had been in high school with 7 years ago were there that I hadn't seen in a long time, and most of them I didn't recognize and called them all the wrong names, but I shook hands with them when I saw them. You know, I haven't seen them in a long time, shook hands with them, and somebody said to me, "My, shaking hands," and I thought, oh dear, I really don't fit in here anymore, do I? I was so intimidated I didn't shake anybody else's hand.
Put your hand in your pocket.
Just, yeah, and I won't shake your hand. In Normandy, they kiss 3 times. Twice on one cheek and once on the other. And if you're really excited to see someone, you kiss 4 times. So if it's a family group and you have to kiss everybody 4 times,
yeah,
it usually takes about 30 minutes for everyone to say hello. You can't forget anybody. But yeah, I think that there are an awful lot of things that I really like in Europe and in the European manner of living that's lacking here. Yeah, it's a little hard to get used to you Packhams again after.
Oh, that's right.
Boulangerie.
It's
so you know, the little Minute Marts. I find them sort of amusing now to go into. Well, I think American supermarkets are too. They're fighting those fights. Supermarkets are starting to come in France now. They don't like Pompidou in France, or the Unal student, because they say that he's a capitalist. He's in favor of the big supermarkets, and all the little merchants are getting squeezed out.
Yeah.
They up in somewhere around Paris, they burned a supermarket in
March.
All the All little greengrocers got together one night and burned the supermarket to the ground. They're anarchists.
While you were there?
Mm-hmm. It was in the papers.
Well, why did you save that paper? Or send me a clipping. Wouldn't that be nice?
Oh, what would be awful if the supermarkets took over.
Oh, I think the saddest thing in the world is to go into a French supermarket and see the baguettes, you know, the long bread in plastic. That's just, it just tore my heart out. The nicest thing about France is going and buying bread every day and just carrying it around under your arm all day.
I mean,
that's what, that, yes, that's what France is bread that you drop on the ground and send the kids for, and they sort of come home eating the end of it and toss it on the table. I mean, that's, none of this worry about hygiene. We're so preoccupied with hygiene in
yeah.
this country. It's just terrible.
Yeah.
And there's no need for it. You see, everything in an American supermarket is wrapped in plastic.
Yeah.
And it's just, we lead cellophane existences.
Yeah.
We really do.
Now, you're not following in the footsteps of any of your family.
No. What do you mean by that? They've all gone separate ways.
Well, I mean this summer.
You mean, what part of my family? By being in France?
Yeah.
You mean?
They never knocked around?
My father did, a little bit. My mother has been to France once, but Phoebe came over to see me for 3 weeks, 2 weeks, so she, at Easter time.
Yeah.
So she was there.
As a vacation?
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't have any urge to travel the way you do.
No. Well, she does, but she has a job, and see, I don't have a job. That makes a difference. I quit my job a year ago.
Well, what?
I love traveling. I mean,
well,
like
where it. Did you? You mean you were the first one?
Well, my father likes to travel, I think. But I've lived a year of my life overseas now, which is, I guess that's not very much, really, but. It's a lot, considering that I'm not 25 yet. I'll be 25 next month.
Well, would you say that you're following in his footsteps?
Well, no. I mean, I think he likes to travel as much as I do, and he thinks it's a good thing. He thought that my going to school was fine. And he's the reason that I went. School.
On his
account.
You went to school to please him.
I went to school because I thought it would be a good idea, but he suggested it.
Over there?
Mm-hmm.
But after you got into it, you saw that it was a waste of time.
Mm-hmm. It was indeed.
You could have learned the language outside.
I think so. Well, the thing... I think the school is good. I mean, I did speak French in school, and that was good. But I already knew everything that they were teaching. I already knew all how to conjugate verbs and do that kind of thing. And that was just really boring to have to go and sit and listen to lectures about verbs and the birds that come in the spring. We had a grammar professor who used to give us lectures about the birds that came in the spring and the flowers that came in the spring. He got very involved with springtime after Easter, and we had many lectures on that. I guess part of it, too, is, again, that idea that when you're learning a language, people think that you have to behave like an idiot to learn it, that they have to teach you these idiotic things, you know, and none of us were stupid people, and we could have done a lot more than they gave us credit for, but we were just treated like imbeciles because we were learning the language. And that's what bothered me, because I didn't feel like an imbecile in school.
Well, one thing I could have used, well, I did. I went in there a little bit. I didn't know German, you see, the way you knew French. See, when I went over there, I didn't know any. All I knew is what I'd learned on the boat. That's all. And I was there 6 weeks before I could carry on a conversation with people. If you call it a conversation. And I went to school a little bit, but I heard lectures, and that, you see, I didn't know what I was doing. I just you knew you were around. I didn't. And what I needed was someone to just check my German. Mm-hmm. I don't care whether they're talking about spring or what. The last time I was over there, when I was there with Faye, the best instruction I had was in the fourth grade reader. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Just a beautiful little book, and beautiful little French. And it was just about my speed. It wasn't idiomatic too much. And the mentality of it, you see, I was so much far ahead of them, I could sort of see the mentality and sort of, you know, get a feeling for the words. Well, you say that wasn't really a proper use of the language. Well, I wasn't ready for the proper use of the language. Fourth grade, about my speed.
Yes, well, I certainly knew that you had to. I mean, they kept telling me use five sentences instead of one.
I know,
I
but
that.
You were a lot. You were advanced, and I wasn't even in the first grade. So you see.
Well, I think I probably was in the wrong division in the school. Had I been in one of the more advanced divisions, I would have enjoyed it a little more. But I didn't do that well on the placement test that I took, so they put me in the first division. So there
well,
I was.
I could enjoy the first grade, you see. Anytime they talked, just to see them perform, I think it would just be a performance to me. I wouldn't care.
Oh, well, it was a performance.
You see, at one time, you see, I had a, up until the last few years.
That's what we've been waiting. Look at it moving. Turn ahead. That's what we've been waiting for, baby.
What did you say?
Turn ahead, light.
I was just thinking what you said about being a performance. Go ahead.
he was
quite a performer, the one that talked about the birds and the bees.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I get what they talk about. And you see, up until the last few years, a good part of my energy went into language as such.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't matter what, it's German, Italian, or French, or Latin, or Old English, or whatever it was. Now, you see, since I've been down here, I haven't had any contact. There's been no way I could work in the language, unless I did it by myself. That's not much fun.
Mm-hmm.
But until I came down here, I did it all the time. You
That's
see, I teach Latin. I didn't teach it because I knew it. I taught it because I liked it. And I liked to work with it, you see. And then one time I did, and you see, what, you see, now I'm taking over for you.
Oh, it's all right.
Oh,
no. Talk.
No. But you see, I had a great devotion to it until now. You see, I've got into other things, and I see other sides. But you see, when I talk against the language, it's like an old Christian talking against the church. It should be. I have more feeling for the language than the people who are advocating it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think too that one of the most exciting things in the world is being able to talk to somebody in their language. I mean, I would love to learn language. I don't care about learning the French.